Hi, welcome to the new Givergy podcast season, the secret guide to fundraising. I'm Ben, Givergy COO, and as a team of fundraising experts, we help clients worldwide raise as much money as possible. This is possible thanks to our award-winning platform and our team's consultative approach, which provide the tools to raise more online and at events. Our clients always comment on how helpful our advice is, so we wanted to share some exclusive insights into our latest podcast series, which will get behind the scenes of modern fundraising. We're excited to share our fundraising best practices, tips, and tricks through this medium, so sit back and enjoy the show. In today's episode, we will chat about the future of fundraising with experienced fundraiser and consultant Paul D'Alessandro. You may be aware that we run a roadshow that travels across the world, covering the future of fundraising. This is because the giving sector is changing rapidly, and we are passionate about helping people keep up with the trends. In this episode, we'll explore how leveraging data tools and artificial intelligence can enhance fundraising efforts and put your organization ahead of the curve. So welcome back, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ben. It's good to see you again. Thank you for having me.
And I think we should tell this as a funny story because Givergy, like I said a moment ago, we do the future of fundraising and, you know, we bring nonprofits together and fundraisers. And you saw one of our invites go out and you emailed me and was like, hey, Ben, did you know I actually wrote a book on the whole subject?
Yeah. So I thought, well, at least there's two of us who are thinking forwardly. And so I was excited to connect with you. And that's, you know, that's the wonderful thing about what we do. It was easy to connect with you and have a great conversation and talk about this subject that we're both interested in.
Totally. And well, you know what, we'll jump to the subject while we're talking about the book, because if you didn't know, The Future of Fundraising is available on Amazon. I've read it personally. It was a great book. But do you want to just briefly tell our listeners a little bit about the book and what's included and how it might help them?
Sure. Thanks. First of all, there's two books. One's $75 US and one's $9, which is mine. So but I wrote this book really for nonprofits to say, you know, this is where the fundraising is going, because there's so many fundraisers around the world. And, you know, I spent the first two chapters writing 2 years ago about artificial intelligence and how it's going to impact the work that we do and, you know, how donors give money. But I also added chapters on the impact of donor advised funds, impact investing, and blockchain, you know, fundraiser competition, which is a big issue in the United States, you know, mergers, collaborations. And the last, you know, my last chapter was, it's kind of the tagline of the book is, you know, how philanthropy's future is here with donors dictating the terms, is really what donors are thinking about fundraisers and what they're thinking about philanthropy. And, you know, I could do a whole revision of this book, just how things have changed in the last 2 years from ChatGPT and the greater impact investment funds and dApps. So that's really.
And we're going to delve into some of that today as well, which I'm excited about. And just so that people find the right book, not the $90 book, what should they search?
It's The Future of Fundraising, and it's my name, Paul D'Alessandro. It's a quick read. It's about 140 pages and the other one's very thick, but you'll see it on Amazon. It's like in the US, it's like $9.99. And, you know, you could download it on Kindle for like $7. So, but really it was a tool that created not just for fundraisers too, but for boards to say, you know, we need to be thinking about things a little differently moving forward.
Brilliant. Well, I think it's worth every penny and it's extremely and reasonably priced as well. So make sure they head over. So, you know, Alistair, this is the second episode that we've done together in this series, which I'm really, really excited about. And I think Alistair's hopefully by this point know a little bit more about you, but I'm going to ask you a quick fire question. So what did you want to be when you were a teenager?
Oh, a teenager, I wanted to be a fighter pilot, you know, fly fighter jets and land on aircraft carriers. But somebody said that, you know, Paul, you talk a lot and you're good with people, so maybe you ought to go into law. And I'm like, well, that sounds like a good idea. But so that was my dream. I actually have a client in the military and I said, can I get a ride on like an F-18? He said, no. So.
I love that. He's like, no, absolutely not. Never.
Absolutely not. No. Nope.
Wow. Wow. And do you think you would have ever ended up as a fundraising consultant?
Not in my wildest imagination. You know, I didn't even really know that much about fundraising. My father grew up very poor, and he made it, you know, became very successful. And in that, he always was reminded of those that helped him. And so he helped a lot of nonprofits and was a lot involved in a lot of nonprofits. And it was kind of something I grew up in and watched how my parents gave to help others. And so I thought, but I never thought that in the end, I didn't even know that there was this profession. But when I got into it in the late 80s, there were only 400,000 nonprofits. And, you know, not a lot of people knew what development directors were. And when you got into a nonprofit, they had names on index cards. And, you know, so many things have changed since then.
A lot. Like so much. And can you think of your favorite moments or one of them that you can think of in fundraising so far? So you're like, some, it could be anything, but just any way you've gone, I feel like I'm living the dream, or I've loved being part of that.
Well, there's so many, because I think, you know, I tell people I've been in places and met people that I never would have met in any profession. And I could think of just a few examples. I've unfortunately been, you know, had tea in the House of Parliament with one of the little lords. I've been in South Africa in a very small event with Desmond Tutu. You know, I've been with two sitting presidents and been at a dinner in Schönbrunn Palace in Vienna. And so, you know, that's like on a large scale, but on the smallest scale too, I've seen the poorest of the poor, like in Haiti after the earthquake, and on a disaster team for a client, and in New Orleans after the Katrina blew through. So I've seen a whole spectrum of great wealth and actually abject poverty. So it's given me a great perspective of what the world looks like.
Yeah, I bet. Wow. What a history of all the, you know, the things and places you've been and seen. And like I said, then been able to really be part of something really impactful and seen the reason that you're in your job, the reason that you want to do, you know, all this help is to, I'm sure, help people do their best and raise as much money as possible to help all the people that need it.
Yeah, you know, and I tell people, you know, we exist for others, not for ourselves. And so whatever good that we could do while we're here on earth, and let us do that in whatever fashion we choose. Some people make a ton of money and they tell me, well, that's the path. They make a lot of money so they could help others, you know, but then I've seen, you know, if you're in the fundraising business, you've seen all types of people. But, you know, I think most people really want to make a difference in other people's lives, especially if they have made some wealth and they care about other human beings, which is most of us.
Definitely. Sometimes for some, it comes later in life, but it does seem to happen to most people at some point. So couldn't agree more. And just briefly as well, you know, in terms of high impact nonprofits, or, you know, what you head up and run, how do you support nonprofits with your business?
Well, we've been in business since 1994. I never thought I'd start my own nonprofit fundraising company. I actually thought it would keep me grounded because I was doing so much traveling or as a regional director of development. And I said, maybe this will keep me home. But now I have 3 million miles and I've traveled around the globe, and we've done campaigns in 100 cities in the US. But you know, our company right now focuses mostly on coaching and working one-on-one with nonprofits, whether they want to raise a large sum of money or a small sum of money, getting their development offices squared away or talking to them about the tech tools that they need. Majority of my work right now is on major gift fundraising and setting up major gift programs for nonprofits. It's interesting that we're working with two large nonprofits right now with budgets over $50 million, and they really don't have a major gifts program. And so it's something that is difficult for some entities to get their hands around. And major gift fundraisers, really good ones, come at a hefty price tag.
They do. And it's actually, I always think it's quite a controversial subject as well, because especially here in the UK, you know, how to phrase it, like in the private sector, people pay for talent, and talent brings, you know, within the third sector, within the nonprofit sector, you know, when you have someone who absolutely smashes it, it can bring such amazing ROI. But it's always a controversial subject, isn't it, on, you know, should you pay for talent if you're a nonprofit? But I feel like you have to, otherwise, how are you going to keep growing? I mean, and those kind of people demand, you know, they need, because they're so good, Do you get where I'm going for that? It's a funny one. People keep talking about it at the moment.
Yeah. And you know, it's been a big conversation, and some of it emanates from the Association of Fundraising Professionals Code of Conduct, which says, you know, you can't pay anybody, you know, on a percentage basis and all these different things. And, you know, I think that was based on a very old model. This is my personal opinion, where, you know, back then with fewer nonprofits, you know, the way it was done is a board would sit in a room and they say, okay, we're going to take these names and we're going to go out and ask, so why? And there wasn't really fundraisers. So why should a fundraiser then get compensated for what a board does when they're really just managing it? But now you have professionals who are really great at building relationships and raising money. And a number of nonprofits have incentive comp and bonus plans. And if you want the talent, you're going to have to go in that direction. And the, you know, the AAFP, you know, some of it is accepted, but, you know, really there's a disadvantage for the smaller nonprofit who can't afford somebody versus a larger one that can to raise the money. So I think that it's got to be fixed in some fashion. There's one example. There was a school, they had a planned giving officer, and he worked with somebody for a very, very long time. And they left $10 million to the institution. But of that $10 million, $1 million was to go to the planned giving officer who was with them for like 10, 15 years. And the school sued and they lost. And that $1 million went to that individual who cared for that donor. And so it's just something I write. I have a chapter on fundraiser comp. And it definitely means if you want to be able to have top talent. I mean, how do you compete in this environment with that, you know, people who can walk out? If you're a great major gift fundraiser and you could step into another position in the private sector and make, you know, 2x, because the work is still hard. I mean, this is hard work. This isn't a 9-to-5 job.
That's it. And, you know, this is leading on to the future fundraising, because if you think about how we work in the private sector, we have sales teams and we have client, you know, now like we have retention teams, you have the business team, and those type of people, they also buzz because, yes, everybody wants to, you know, the people that normally get into the nonprofit sector do genuinely want to help other people or causes. But that type of person as well, quite often is motivated by reward. And I think I've met a lot of really amazing people in that role. And I think to myself, you're sales. You're a really good salesperson. You're a relationship builder, but you're also so excited when you land a donation to you in that person's head. It's like them going to win a Salesforce client if you're working in Salesforce. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a transition over, and I'm kind of starting to think that. It's like, how can nonprofits adjust to that mentality of thinking forward to go, well, if we want to get to this number, if this person can bring me in, making it up, 4 million, and they cost me 200,000 or whatever it is, it's trying to kind of break that barrier down, because so many nonprofits want to, but they feel that they're not allowed to because of the code of conduct or the regulations as well.
That barrier has to be broken down, and it really starts with some boards that have a poverty mentality. I mean, I had one attorney who was sitting on a board says, you know, we can't spend more than 10% on fundraising, and it's a law. There's no law that says that. You know, I had a client, they spent 30% of their money on fundraising, and their revenue went to 5x what they were doing because they made a great investment. But, you know, the model that one of the clients that I work for out in the Western states, they created a bonus structure, and it was based on three things. One, did the organization hit its revenue goals? Two, did the region hit its revenue goals? And three, did the individual hit their personal goals, which was how many people did you see, how much money was raised? And so let's say the budget was $5 million and they raised $7 million, then there was a cash bonus money that was put in there. And that was awarded to everybody. There was one individual, he did so well, he had a $50,000 salary, he got a $50,000 bonus. There was not a problem with that. But another example that I mentioned in the book is what Charity Water has done. They've got they have private companies that put money into a bonus pool that Charity Water then can then distribute to its employees, not from its, you know, operating revenue. So people are looking at models that will reward people for the hard work that they're doing. And so if you're a fundraiser, where do you want to go? I want to go to where somebody is being creative, forward thinking, and is going to compensate me for this work. And this is, like I said, this is not easy work. I mean, I'm having a hard time because finding people who actually, because of COVID, who actually want to go out and talk to other people and ask them for money.
Yeah. I can imagine this. And sometimes we have the same problem where it's a lot of people don't like to pick up the phone as well anymore. Mm-hmm. I see that more and more. They want to just do live chat. Or I saw a journey between a client and ourselves, and I was reading it. I was like, why don't we just pick up the phone? And they're like, it's funny. Some people are saying to me, sometimes people don't want to speak anymore.
No.
Oh, that's so different.
I have a client, and she's an executive director of an organization. She does not have a cell phone. She doesn't have a phone number anymore. Everything's text and email.
Do you know what's annoying about this? Because it's just something I'm kind of battling with at the moment. So I'm like, I read emails at trials sometimes, and I think, do you know what? We could have solved this in a five-minute call, and it didn't need to go on for 5 days of email, then 2 days of wait, and then they'll respond. And I keep saying that to my own team. I'm like, just pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone, and let's just chat it through, because it's more efficient as well. But also, it's better for everyone involved. So I'm old school. I've still got this mentality of speaking to each other.
No, I think it's 2 weeks that the symposium I was in New York City yesterday, they were talking about corporate culture. You know, it's a lot easier when you're in an office setting to walk by and have a 2 minute conversation with somebody on your team, say, well, how do we solve this problem, than trying to get on Teams or Zoom and having the conversation. So, you know, like in New York, for instance, a lot of companies are asking people to come back for more than 1 day, 2 day, 3 days. You know, so I'm seeing, you know, I remember the time going on the trains to the city during COVID, and the buses, and there were a few people. Now they're crowded again. So I think it works for some, but it doesn't work for all.
Yeah, totally. And this leads me on to one of my questions, which is, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that, you know, the fundraising industry is facing today?
Well, I think really one of the biggest thing is the saturation of nonprofits and the competition among nonprofits too. And, you know, we mentioned it in the last podcast, I call it the great migration of how during COVID, everybody, there was a lot of the wealthy people moved out of the Northeast into the Southeast and from the West to Texas and Idaho and Arizona. And so trying to get, you know, a donor said, well, I don't really need to be in an office anymore. So they're not going to be in a CITIS, if you will, so somebody could go visit them. So it's got to be on Zoom. And then, you know, they're being more picky and choosy about what events they want to go to, because they realize that they don't have to go to everything anymore. But the biggest challenge, I think, is going to be, are you equipped to handle Chat GPT, artificial intelligence, and where donors are putting their money versus, you know, it used to be there were charities and there were donors, but now there's multiple places that donors can give money. I'll just give you by way example. I was at another meeting in Orlando, and I had a donor who had given away several $1 million, and he was talking about he has an impact investment fund in Africa. And I said, well, how do you choose between the charity, the nonprofit, and how do you choose between the impact investment fund? He said, I look to see where my dollar is going to go to the furthest. So now there's a lot more impact investment funds with a return on investment. So you could take money from your donor advised fund, put it in there, and have it returned back. And I know I'm getting into some things that are nuanced and complicated, but it's the reality of where philanthropy is going and what donors are thinking about.
It's different. That's you know, like you've just said that, that example you've just given, it's a lot more smarter. It's a lot more well thought out. I think, you know, in the past, everything felt quite, maybe not easy, but more transactional, and kind of, you know, relationships were easier to understand. But now there's all these tools and thoughts. And I think it goes back to the donor. The donor is now thinking differently as well. They're like, well, we're seeing it with like the younger generations at the moment, where a lot of charities are coming to us at the moment and saying, well, we're really, really struggling to attract the next generation of donor into our event portfolio. And I've been saying to a group of them, like, well, the problem is, it's like, if I think of myself, how old am I? 37. And, you know, I wouldn't naturally go to a gala dinner. I think they are amazing, and I'm not saying that they're not. But what I mean, in terms of my friendship group, we wouldn't normally go to one. We go to lots of other things. And lots of my friends do actually do things with charities. But now they seem to actually want to get involved. They actually, like, they want to march down to London, or they want to clean on the beach, or they want to do things. And I said, you've kind of got to rethink it, because I do think they will give, but I also think they want to help, but in a different way to how before you've put on a t-shirt and you've gone and run around to gala dinner. Do you hear what I'm saying with this? It's very different, I think.
I've said for as long as I've been in this business, I said involvement gets ownership, and ownership gets investment. So you can't be transactional and like, here's our charity. This is what we need. Give us money. And that's why that generation is, I want to get involved. And if they're getting involved, then they get passionate about it. And then they could support it, and they could support it for their lifetime. But how they support it versus how their parents supported it is a lot different. They have crypto. They have, you know, Venmo. You know, we had a client, they just put a QR code on their envelope that went out to everybody. And some people never opened the envelope. They just hit the QR code and gave. And so giving is almost an instantaneous impulse then for some in that generation, you know. And of course, you know, one of my sons he created a donor advice fund, and he gives, you know, he has a lot of money in the donor advice fund. He gives out of that donor advice fund.
Yeah. It just shows, doesn't it? It's with everything. It's not just in fundraising. Everything we're all doing is there's never been probably a time, you know, in human history, these last 10 to 15 years has gone so rapidly forward. And, it's leading on to the next question around, you know, the word AI. And I have to say, you know, I keep thinking about this because my boss, Julian, we were chatting recently, and he was like, Ben, we need to start thinking about ChatGPT. And I was like, yeah, I know all about it. It's in the press. And there's so much negative press at that. This was 2 months ago, you know, and you had people like Elon Musk and all these people then signing a petition to say, let's pause. And it's funny. You think about like Terminator and all these films that have been out there around AI for years, and they've planted a seed in our head that we think that the machines are all going to come and kill us, which I know is a really negative thing to say, but somebody said that to me as well the other day. Then when I always think about Terminator, and I'm like, I actually don't think we're there yet. I don't think AI and the ChatGPT is that. I think, would you agree? I think it's a different level of AI.
Sure. Well, I think, it's funny because, you know, I wrote about it 2 years ago, and as so much has changed since then. So I want to share some thoughts about, you know, AI. You know, one of the things that I talk about in my book is that there's one point where they had two computers talking to each other. And what they've discovered is, I think I talked about it in my book, is that the computers created their own language. And so they had to unplug them because nobody understood what they were saying to each other. But I also say in this book is that it's going to cause the loss of a lot of fundraisers' jobs. And people like kind of called me out on it a little bit. And they said, well, why? And here's my thought on this is that, you know, now that we have so much data, you know, on so many individuals, particularly in the United States, they call there's zeta bytes of information. And this all started for me when someone spoke at a conference about the bucket challenge and what they did with all the names. And the exec put all the names, a MasterCard actually took all the names and provided them with who the best prospects were in a day because of the artificial intelligence tools that the private sector has on all of us. So we have artificial intelligence now with companies like iWave and Giving DNA and Boodle, which really now will identify who your best prospects are in a matter of hours once you uploaded your database. But now what you have is, you have chat, like for instance, Boodle ChatGPT, when I was just speaking to them about it, that's going to allow you, once you upload your data for a monthly fee, you could now go into, you know, pick it to any town, you know, in the United States or, you know, a county, let's say, tell me all the people who care about, you know, climate change, who live in this town, who have a net worth over such a money. So now it's going to give you the names of those people. Then you have to go out and find them. It's going to do away with that whole amount of time that people sit around with boards. It's like, who do we know? Who do you think would give to this? That's all going to be gone. And then what the other piece of it is, and this is what I see happening, is artificial intelligence, since it knows everything that you're doing based on how you interact on the computer, it will say, well, put $10,000 in this fund or $5,000. And artificial intelligence will look at the nonprofits that you most likely would support or could support. And this is based on their metrics of how well they report. Let's say it's $5,000. So $1,000 should go to this charity, $2,000 for this. And then, so it will eliminate your decision-making based on how you utilize technology on your own computer. So again, so I could see someone saying, well, you know, I'm picking, you know, going to meet somebody and say, well, you know, I have my money in a donor advice fund, and that money is allocated based on how artificial tells me what charities within my network should be given to. So don't need to have a conversation. And I that's a really forward thinking, but I see that coming at some point. But at some point too, you still need people to have personal relationships with others.
You do. And it goes back to what we were saying at the start of the, you know, start of the episode around picking up the phone and having the conversation. There is nothing more gold than having that. But I suppose, you know, that example you just gave there is really interesting. It's also a bit like, wow. Do you think that there's anything now that fundraisers should be thinking about on how do they get themselves in front of the AI? Because normally you're trying to get in front of the donor and trying to attract them. But I just mean, if let's just say that amazing tool was doing that and saying, right, Ben, I think you should give 2,000 to this, 500 to this. Like, do you think there's any tips or ways that we can even start to forward think ahead of that?
Yeah, I think that one, if you haven't used ChatGPT, you should start learning how to use ChatGPT and pay attention to, you know, how that tool is used. And if you haven't used artificial intelligence, to start going to some conferences that talk about how tech could help in prospect research, just to inform yourself so you could inform the board. So when they ask the question, how are we utilizing AI? And then there's another question is, how are we protecting our donor data? And then there's a whole area around cybersecurity and the hacks that are happening to the data. And then the other thing too is, you know, relationships are key. So, you know, what's happened during COVID, you know, a lot, it's become somewhat transactional. You know, we send emails, we send texts, but you need to have a core of people who are on your side, who are champions for your organization, that you can have that personal relationship. Because like I said, people give to the things that they care about. There has to be an intermediary in that who they care about. And, you know, high net worth donors, they want to have a relationship first. I have a high net worth donor who said to me, you know, a couple of months ago, he said, you know, Paul, I don't want to talk to the executive director anymore, because once he got to know him, all he does is ask me for money every time I call. I just want to have a conversation with him. I'll support him, but all I want to have is a conversation. So I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but so many people don't want to go out and talk to people and just sit down and have a cup of coffee and go out and do that. But those are important ingredients for success. At the same time, be mindful how this space is changing.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think you just said it a moment ago, but I think just downloading the app or trying it online, I've always found that when I meet fundraisers and people within the nonprofit sector, it's one of the most under-resourced sectors out there, you know, especially, you know, for Givergy, nearly it's more than 70% of our client base are small to medium charities, but really small. It might be a hospice in a small town and they're doing an amazing job. And when I speak to them, I'll be like, So who does this? Me. Who does this? Me. And you're like, wow, okay. And there are these amazing individuals. I think there's a lot of people that are actually really could do with the help, but they just haven't got the funds to do that. And I just feel like if you kind of get out there and just try it, in my job, I've been amazed now. I've got the marketing team and our operations team. I've tasked them and said, I need you now to look at ChatGPT and try and see, you know, how can it help us? And we've already been given this enormous list. But the other day, I was playing with an auction item that a client had sent to me, and they said, you know, have you got any ideas? I chatted to ChatGPT and I said, they've got this auction item. It's in Miami. It's a villa. I answered it asked me questions. Right. And all of a sudden, in seconds, it wrote the most beautiful script. Oh my God, I need to tell all the fundraisers, because they could be doing that right now. That's just one example. You do see what I mean? There's so much that they can do.
Yeah. So you don't need to make the change at the, you know, you listen to this podcast and say, oh my gosh, I need to do something now. But you need to start taking the steps in the right direction and thinking about, how am I going to get in front of donors in the future? Where are donors going to be giving their money? And if they're going to be giving it to a donor advised fund, do we set up our own donor advised fund? You know, there are some companies that have, like private companies that have their own donor advised funds. You know, I know one academic major university in the US, they have a donor advised fund and some of the money goes to the university and then the other money goes out somewhere else. So how can I be thinking of being able ultimately to provide the services that we're providing if I can't get revenue, all my revenue from a donor? And I've said, like, for instance, and I mentioned Habitat for Humanity, and a few years ago, the exec was giving a presentation, you know, that they started their Restore, which is sells used goods in Canada. And a couple of years ago, they generated $400 million of revenue based on donated goods that they then sold. So you have to look at different revenue models and things that will support your ability to provide the missions. It's not just going to be donor gives money, use that money, deploy that money and do good. You have to look at different revenue streams, new revenue streams, and how AI can help you with that.
And I think as well, just, you know, something that we all know about it, but I feel like CSR, you know, it's always been there. And I've like Givergy, for example, we're a B Corp now. And I meet lots of other B Corps, and you can tell they've got a whole team just dedicated to being a B Corp for the right reasons. And you can see this fund that are these funds that are growing in all of these, just in the group that I'm in. And I was thinking, how are the charities going to get in front of these? Because some of them, you can see on the calls, are like, well, we think we're going to help this. I think we're going to do this. But they didn't really exactly know. And I just thought, God, that's the more that corporates are having to be, you know, more socially aware and they want to support more. I think there's probably something in this tech as well that can help get them in front of those people as well.
Sure. The tech might be able to identify. Like I was told, and I'm not 100% sure of the validity of it, but in India, for instance, for CSR, the companies have to give 2% of their profits to charities within India. But, you know, how do you figure out who those companies are and who they want to give to? But all that information, you know, it used to take so long to figure these things out. ChatGPT and AI is going to provide that information, but then you still have to act on it. So everyone's getting into the tech and all the data and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, the data is just one tool, but then you have to then decide what you're going to do with it and how you're going to use it. It's a powerful tool in your toolbox, but you've got to then use it.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what we're on that. We're in the same boat. We're going, well, okay, so we know it can do everything, but how is it actually going to help our organization? And that's what it is, isn't it? It's okay, so let's really understand it and then try and see how we can support it in probably, like you were saying a moment ago, baby steps. Just try a few things.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it on the last podcast about collaboration and competition. You could just simply ask, who are those organizations like us that we should probably collaborate with? I mean, it's an interesting question to ask in ChatGPT, and who are those who might be competitors of ours that, you know, what can we be doing differently? It'd be interesting to see what ChatGPT comes up with. You know, I'm not saying that that's the answer, but, you know, a lot of people, it's going to, just think about how the phones have changed so much, you know, it's just going to change things so much rapidly. You know, Tim Cook at Apple just launched the new glasses that you put on, which is like computing that's so far advanced. And, you know, people are going to be using those a lot more to have, they might even use those for face-to-face meetings, you know, doing a presentation. It's going to isolate us more. So then you have to anticipate, it's a $3,500 cost right now, and it'll probably come out next year. But how are high net worth donors going to use that? And how is it going to affect your charity? So these are the things that I think about. I don't think about the moment right now. I think about how things are changing so rapidly.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. I think that's what you've got to have, that type of thinking, isn't it? Because I think kind of the mistake all of us have done is ChatGPT has dropped on us. And ChatGPT is one, you know, AI is here and it's been here for a while. We just haven't realized we're only now really using the word commonly, you know, because of ChatGPT. But it does feel like it's dropped out of nowhere. And but like yourself in your book, you've been talking about this for years, going, it's coming, guys. You've got to start thinking about it. Think about data tools and the companies you've talked about. So it does. I think we need to think a bit further forward now because of how rapidly that's happened. Because in a year, what's next?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to, and you have to inform your board. I mean, I've been on Zoom calls where people have stopped, said, you know, excuse me, what's AI? And I'm like, okay. So, you know, if you're not paying attention, things might just pass by you. So I think being educated and informed, it can help you in many, many ways, because then you look at the opportunities that you can use these things for. You know, I always say you problem solve your way to the goal, and there are different problems that come up, you know, but you have to adapt. I mean, look at what COVID did and Zoom. We, you know, some did exceedingly well during COVID and some not so much. Some don't exist anymore.
That's it.
We constantly adapt.
We move, we adapt, we grow. So it's, it's going to be an interesting, I think, next couple of years, because it does, I feel like you're saying, we need to now sit, just think about it a little bit. You don't need to spend like a lifetime on it, but just really try and go, okay, how can I possibly adapt this into my role or organization? But that forward planning, I think, is so needed in this sector at the moment. So I hope lots of people listen to this episode and just think, you know what, I'm just going to look a little bit further into it, at least to start the thinking.
Yeah, even in the small scale and the small community where everybody knows you, to the global charities. I mean, with 8 billion people in the world, the needs will not go away. And so at the end of the day, the governments can't solve these problems of themselves. They don't have enough fiscal ability to do that. So then where does this money come from? And it's going to come from, you know, the rest of us in the world. And really, the people who have money in this world is a very, very small percentage of the world population to do that. But we're still going to have to step up and support those things that need the resources to do that. And, you know, it's going to happen through the third sector, as you say, I guess, in the UK, and the nonprofit sector and the NGOs or whatever you want to call them, B Corps, impact funds, you know, and donor advised funds.
Yeah, I feel like everyone right now is listening to this, is Googling, like, what's a B Corp, what's impact investment?
Yeah, but you should be informed, even like in, you know, finance, you know, I guess advisory firms and everything, you know, people are putting money in impact funds and that money is getting invested in, you know, different vehicles that will provide a great return.
Yeah, that's it. But unfortunately, we're actually out of time, but we've covered, well, actually, really, I feel like this could have been a double episode just on starting talking about the future of fundraising. So I'll be sure to invite you back. But hopefully, Paul, you've enjoyed today's session with us on the future of fundraising.
Oh, I have. And thanks, Ben. You and I are kindred spirits and like-minded in this. So
absolutely. Well, we'll be getting you back on the next season, would you be sure? So, well, look, listeners, we really hope that you've enjoyed today's episode and found the content informative. If you want to hear more from Paul, head over to highimpactnonprofit.com to see how he supports nonprofits and order his book, The Future of Fundraising, which is available on Amazon. And remember, it's not the $90 version. It's the $9.99 version if you're in the US. He's also, though, featured in another of our episodes this season, Nonprofit Collaboration versus Donor Competition. So make sure you have a listen. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts. So feel free to email podcast@givigy.com. And you can also make suggestions on future topics or guests you would love to hear on the show. Thank you again. And don't forget to hit subscribe or follow to listen and look out for the next episode. Thank you.